The family of a local teenager says she never would have left home without calling.
Just praying for the best. I want my daughter home, man. And if she can't come home, I just want to know, is she there?
These posters around the towns of Livermore and Jay beg anyone with information to come forward. Posters that Richard puts up every spring, never losing hope.
Tell me what happened to my daughter. Just look me in the eyes so I can see her.
An arrest in a nearly four-decade-old cold case, thanks to cutting-edge DNA technology. The arrest happening exactly 39 years to the day
when Parabon Nanolabs used that sample to create 3D models of the suspected killer's face.
It's heartbreaking. We miss her, and we're going to find her. We're going to keep looking till we do.
It's like a never-ending nightmare. It doesn't end. It keeps returning and coming back.
And we're live. All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and thank you to everyone watching this back as a recording.
Yes, absolutely. So tonight we're joined by Tammy McCulloch-Rapon and Samantha Wilkinson. We're here to discuss the missing person case of Jared McCulloch, disappeared November 5th, 2023. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
So I should say, Tammy, you're Jared's mom. So if you don't mind, kind of go into his childhood and who he is.
He was always like a small, scrawny kid growing up, kind of sickly, I guess, a little bit. But then after he got into his, pre-teenage, yeah. That's Samantha and Austin and Jared.
That's me.
She was so cute. Yeah, that's he was so skinny and little and sickly for a good long while, but he grew into himself quite a bit. He ended up playing football and basketball and every sport you could imagine, you know, that he could try. He didn't like baseball too much, but we tried, I think, just about every sport we could.
Yeah, I meant to remind you guys that his picture would be on here as we talk, because I kind of feel like that took you by surprise, so I apologize.
No.
It's
like
nice to see.
Yeah.
That's me, too.
I was going to say, Samantha, see you as well?
Yep. Jared and I have always been thick as thieves, and you'll notice in probably all the pictures you have of him and I, he has a hand on me in every picture. He was always protecting over me, and nobody messed with me if Jared was around.
And we should say Samantha is Jared's cousin, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, but they grew up more like brother and sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Please go ahead and continue talking about Jared, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I mean, he was like I said, he was sickly whenever he was young, and like in some of these pictures you see where he was still thin, but he got healthy again. He got doing real well and played football and basketball. Of course, basketball, baseball, none of that worked, but he found his place in football, and he really loved football, and he had a lot of close friends there that, you know, I still talk to a lot of. It became a group, like even with a lot of the parents there, you know, I still talk to several of them because my younger son played football also, so it was kind of a family with the kids and playing.
Yeah, that tends to happen with sports and kids, right? Yeah.
Right, and I remember Jared always had to have like a mixtape before his games, you know, like you had to have songs to get you pumped up and ready to go, you know. I still like listen to some of those songs and stuff. You hear them and it makes you think of him.
So what was on Jared's playlist?
Oh my Lord. To be honest, what's that song called, Samantha? Because I had a Mustang at the time. It was a four-door coupe, so it was not nothing cool. But you get these big guys that play football, and they're all defensive linemen. They all wanted me to drive them in that Mustang to their games. And what's that song called?
It's called Headstrong. I can't remember the band that sings it, but it's from when we were kids.
From the window to the wall. You know.
Oh, no,
that,
you're thinking of the other one.
Yeah. It's that get low because it was
song.
They were defensive linemen, so it was that get low, you know, that part, because it was getting them pumped up. They had to get low on the defensive line, you know. It's a little embarrassing for me driving all of them.
Yeah, I imagine. Right?
So what did Jared do after school? Like, after he got out of school?
Well, unfortunately, when he was 16, our house burned down, and we're going through the process of that, and we stayed into a motel for a bit until we could find a rental house. And then after that, it was so hard for him. He lost a best friend, and it's so hard for the boys to see a house that they had grew up in. So I made a decision to move to Indiana, which I didn't stay there long, but just for, I think, what was it, a year, Sam? It wasn't long.
Yeah, it wasn't too long.
Yeah, because that wasn't just the right choice, you know, to pick up and leave. So
we kind of moved around a lot in that couple, like, 2-3 years after the fire.
Yeah.
It was hard to find a place to settle again.
And it's hard. You don't realize how much a fire hurts. Like, you lose those Christmas ornaments that the kids made in school. And, you know, I mean, you lose baby clothes. You lose a lot of things. Mm-hmm. That we kind of struggled for a bit after that.
And animals have always been so close to us in this family, and they even lost a few animals in the fire, and it was hard on everybody. It was bad.
Just another way of, as far as Jared being a protector. That night, of course, one of my awesome friends, she couldn't even tell you, but she knows. I'm sure she's listening. We'll just call her Dee Dee, and she knows what I mean by that, but. She actually drove through a field to come out there, and we stood out there and we went back to her house for a few hours and come back that, you know, as soon as daylight hit, Jared's arguing with Austin, his younger brother, and telling him he's got to go to school. And I'm like, Jared, he does not. You know, I mean, why are you arguing with him? And I didn't realize, and they argued and Jared made him, you know, and Jared was still only, like I said, 16. I didn't realize until later that after we went through there, Austin's cat had actually passed away in the fire. Jared had already seen that, and you could see the scratch marks on one of the walls that was still standing. So Jared wanted to bury the animals before Austin could ever see them.
Oh, man.
I didn't even know that part until, you know, after Austin went to school and he was explaining to me. I mean, that's just...
That's like real man behavior right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's so many pictures that I've seen of Jared with... So many pictures of Jared with his dogs, too, which they play a part in this whole disappearance as well, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Those were his babies.
Yeah, Roxy was attached at the hip, for sure. Yeah. She has separation issues.
She still sits in that same chair outside now. Like, if I let her out, she'll sit in that same chair sitting outside.
So, If we could talk to things sort of, what happened with Jared? Jared has a kid as well, right? So what led up to him sort of being in Indiana in the first place?
Okay, that I don't know as far as Indiana. As far as Sam originally talked to the mother of his child. His child's 14. Now, and she originally is the one who was able to talk to her and get a little bit more details. And from what we were told was he came there because to see the 14-year-old who was actually in the Benton, Illinois Detention Center, which is now closed down. That's all we know. And that's in Illinois, though. And
right.
I don't know what happened that got him to go.
Oh, right, right.
Moment. All we know is what we are told on that, and that he was supposed to be in Illinois, not in Indiana. So that's what brings us all.
Yeah. It did make it a little confusing trying to research this, some of the towns that were the same, and some of the news articles even said that he was in Indiana for some of this, and it was just at the end, right? It was Illinois for the last day that people sort of seen him.
We've got no proof that he was ever in Indiana, with the exception of the dogs in the truck being found there, and it's just across the state line. So we've got no clue at all that he was ever actually in Indiana.
Right.
All right, so November.
He was never on camera or anything in Indiana.
And to our knowledge, there's no phone pings off of any Indiana towers either.
No, there's not.
So November 5th, he leaves his house to come To go down and visit his son.
Actually, November 4th, because he left the
November
evening.
November 4th.
So somewhere around 6 p.m. Mm-hmm.
And then he was supposed to be staying the night at his ex-wife's, right? Or ex-girlfriend?
Well, ex-girlfriend. It had only been a few hours because they didn't get into town until what we seen was about 1:38 at the gas station there, not too far from her house. But in my theory, I kind of think it was 2:38, but we fell back at 2 a.m.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there's a time change, which also convolutes this whole story as well.
Right, right.
Yes.
So he drove down there. He never made it to the ex-girlfriend's home.
Not that we know of. We don't know.
Right. We do know that the first, where we really start tracking him in Salem, when he was there about 1:30 in the morning, Salem is only about 20-25 minutes away from Sandoval, which is where he was supposed to be going.
Not even that far.
So,
yeah, we can see it
here
on the map as well.
Yes, Sandoval. I didn't actually have that. What was the name of that town that he was in?
And you're already that close.
Yeah, it's right there to the left, Jeff. Right next to
Salem. Oh, right there. Right there. Okay.
Yeah, it's right there.
So this is where he was... supposed to be going. And at what, 1:30 in the morning, he was spotted here at Hicks in Salem.
In Salem.
Hucks, yes. Mm-hmm. And he was on camera inside of
it. Or Hucks, yeah. And then from there, he was spotted again at Phillips 66.
But that's four hours later.
Right.
There's a four-hour gap there.
Yeah, so there is a bit of a...
How do you drive lost for 4 hours in that small of an area? An area that Jared is semi-familiar with, because, you know, when we discussed this, his childhood and him playing football, that they lived in Salem. That's where Jared spent the majority of his childhood years. So, yes, he hadn't been there in probably... almost 15-20 years, but things like that you don't forget when you live somewhere until you're 16 years old. You know, I can still drive straight to the house that I grew up in, and I moved from there when I was only 12. So,
okay, all right. So from Salem to Central City is about a 20-minute drive. And
right.
If you're going from there to Sandoval, if you go, it doesn't even look like you would have to go out of your way. You could go from Salem to Sandoval and still get to Central in about 20 minutes, probably, maybe 25.
You almost have to go to Sandoval first to get to Central City, like almost.
Yeah, it looks like this is probably the fastest route that, you know, Google's trying to show me, this blue line.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm not entirely sure why. But yeah, that's a main road that heads directly over to Sandoval and then down. So it seems more logical that you would take that route, for most people at least.
Mm-hmm. And like we said, he does know the area too, so I mean, for him to be, which now she did say that he didn't say that he was lost until, like, later on. She's kind of, like, corrected herself on that, like, one of the last phone calls. But, I mean, we still don't know what all the phone calls consisted of. So, we still don't... How can in the world of video cameras, how can he not be seen for, what, 4+ hours, depending on...
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't know if she's going to... Call records and stuff, the time change, can't follow that too well. So, 4 or 5 hours...
Yeah, and unless, of course, like, the police weren't necessarily doing their job, not to shit on them, but if they're not looking into it, then they're not going to find anything, right? So,
well, I was told by her herself that she's not been questioned at all, so, I mean, I guess I'm not.
And so, then the last time that he was actually spotted was down here in Carmi.
Yes.
At another Hucks. Is it a gas station Hucks or a convenience store type place?
Both.
It's a little bit of both. It's kind of like a Casey's gas station, if you've ever been in one of those. Like, you can get a little bit of groceries in there and snacks and gas.
Yeah, I think you guys have different types of convenience stores, because I see Huck's is really popular and Phillips 66, and we have none of that around here. So yeah, it's different chain sort of areas, I guess. So that route from Phillips down to Phillips 66 to the Huck's in Carmi, that I think was like a 80 something miles. I don't remember how much time that was supposed to be, but I mean, that was, that seemed like it
would be over an hour.
Yeah, and if you look straight down south there in Benton is where his son is supposed to have been. You
can see down here?
Yeah, that's where his son was supposed to have been. He's in that Benton.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he, for whatever reason, skipped going to Benton and went over to Carmi instead.
Yes. I did get a screenshot as far as him in Carmi, and it was him. I mean, I know that, and he was okay. And, I mean,
he was alone?
As far as I know, they did send me a screenshot, and I'm thankful for that, but I mean, I can't really, and I've asked for the videos, but you know, that's Knox County's call, and I'm not allowed to see them. Really, Salem Police Department was the ones who initially, at least, they would not send me the video or even a screenshot at the time, but they were the ones who actually described exactly what he was wearing, so I could put it out on a missing poster to try to say last seen wearing, because, I mean, obviously I didn't know, and then two, 3 weeks later, one of the Carmine chief of police, he actually sent me a screenshot, because I said, unless I see him, I can't verify that it was him. I mean, so I got a screenshot. Yeah. And I asked, because if I could see how he's walking, his body movements, I mean, I would know if he was upset. I know how he gets when he's nervous. I mean, I know his little, you know, twitches. I mean, if you get nervous or upset, everybody's got their own little body movements. I could tell you that, but for whatever reason, they won't let me see any of that. And I don't know why.
I understand, like, some things, but that's something that at least just Tammy should have been privy to from the very beginning, to verify,
at least to identify, right?
Right, mm-hmm. To make sure it was him. Yeah.
So then that was the last known sighting of him until they found his vehicle here.
Several witnesses come forward that have said that they've seen him in St. Francisville, Illinois, but we have no video proof of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what kind of, so did he have GPS in his truck, or was he using GPS on his phone?
We've got first off, there's GPS and there's OnStar on the truck, and the truck is in our name because Jerry didn't have no credit. So everything's in our name, including the insurance. But for whatever reason, we don't have access to any of that information. Even though it's in our name, Jerry's name's not on it.
Well, it's weird if he had GPS that he's circling around different areas, not really sure where to go, or never actually made his final destination.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And St. Francisville is also the last place that his phone pinged.
Okay.
Right. And that's
Tony
why we...
Flowers said... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
That's why everybody kind of thinks that he went across that Cannonball Bridge. And Tommy, she's a sweetheart. She says food and fuel, because, you know, we've seen like some of the receipts, and he did get both food and fuel.
Okay, so that was the last known ping for his vehicle, and some supposedly sightings of him.
And that was at 10:08. The last time that his phone pinged was at 10:08, if I get it with the right time and the right call. Or was it 11:08?
11:08. If that's correct, I mean, and we don't know if it's Central Eastern. I'm guessing it's
right,
Central.
And that's what I was going to say. That's where things get tricky. Once the very tail end of his phone record, he's so close on the state line between Indiana and Illinois that it switches back and forth between Central and Eastern.
And was that AM or PM?
AM.
Oh. AM.
Sunday morning. And as far as I seen that thing that popped up from Donald, he said that OnStar can't track it. Mm-hmm. I did call OnStar. OnStar said that they can go forward, but they can't go back. And I did call GM as far as the mechanics and stuff there. They also said that unless an alert pops up, they don't have the equipment to be able to track it. Like, say if it's like got an engine problem, then I guess the vehicle will hit that the mechanics in the GM shop can track it.
Interesting. At least so they locate his vehicle. Now, was it on the side of the road? Was it in the field? Was it
on the side of the road?
And what condition was this vehicle in?
So his truck was found with, it was a four-door truck, so it has back doors as well. And both of the, so the truck was parked passenger side along the river, driver side out to the road in the field on the other side of the road. And the front and back driver side doors were open. And the truck had been left running until it ran out of gas. And then because it was running and the key was in the on position, it stayed like that until the battery died. And his dogs were there. Right, and his dogs were there with the truck, and they had their leashes on, but they were not tied to the truck in any way. So, like, they could have gotten out or something like that. And I don't know if they got out and got back in or anything like that, but it's strange that they were right there in the truck and weren't out, because Rusty, especially, he's a known runner. If he gets out of the fence, you're going to have to go find him and catch him.
I was going to ask that, like, if he was to say stay or sit, don't move, no. Like, would they do that, or would they do whatever the hell they wanted to do?
That's a big question. We get asked that a lot. You know, Jared's dogs were house pups. They're spoiled. They don't listen, and they might sit for a treat if you're patient enough.
Now,
yeah, they don't mind, and they were both in the back seat, which was odd. And you know what we are saying as far as the conditions and how the truck was found. All we know is what the detectives have told us.
Right.
We've not seen any pictures to verify that. And as far as being able to know who, as far as even who found the truck, we've asked several times as far as the, we were told three different stories. Once it was an oil worker, then it was a the mayor of, who's now resigned of St. Francisville, and then we were told a local citizen. So we've never even been able to speak to or know who actually found the truck to call it and report it. So
we only did Jared carry weapons with him at all?
No. He couldn't. He was on probation. No, he wouldn't. And he didn't. No.
It's just weird that both doors were open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless I guess he stopped to let the dogs out, maybe to use the restroom. Or what do you guys think? Know,
he wouldn't have left
initially.
Go ahead, Sam.
Okay. Initially, when I heard that the truck had been found and the dogs were there and he wasn't around, you know, I thought that. I thought, well, maybe he pulled off the highway and drove out a couple miles to like a country area to let the dogs out to stretch their legs and something happened. But it wasn't until I drove down there myself and seen it, like, this is not a place where you would just pull off and let your dogs out. Like, you are miles and miles away from any main highway, let alone a town. Just the drive from St. Francisville out to where the truck was found takes over 20 minutes. It's about 25 minutes, I think. And it's like St. Francisville is a one stoplight town. Like, it's a tiny little town there. It's not near any main highways of any kind. And I think I had hoped that he had just taken the dogs out, but the area just wasn't set up for that. And with being so close to the river, there's all kinds of places along the river where you can pull off, and there's scenic spots and stuff like that where someone would go if they were taking the dogs out for relief. But this was just on the side of a one-lane gravel road. And by one lane, I mean you're going in the ditch if someone's coming at you and you have to pass them. Like, it's practically a service road to all of those oil wells and stuff that are out there.
Crystal made a comment that that's what my husband does when he has to go to the restroom or to the bathroom. He opens up both doors. And I've seen that traveling down, you know, the interstate. People do that.
I've done
it. Right.
Jared wouldn't, I mean, to clarify, as far as even like the pen and stuff and people questioned about the leashes, did he always keep the leashes on the dogs? Well, he did, because of the fact that he would never keep both the doors open like that, because at one point the dogs, he was traveling, I think, and I forget what even state he was in, but anyhow, the dogs got out, and of course, Rusty being a runner, they took off, and Roxy followed, and they ran into traffic. He was so scared and I mean, just terrified, that after that, he always kept the leashes on, so that way, before he even got out of the truck to even open up the back door, he had his hands on those leashes, so they couldn't run anywhere, because they've been known to run off, and he just didn't want that to happen.
Yeah. So the dogs were just sitting in the truck when they found it, right, with the doors open?
Yeah. And what they told me, because I'm learning to ask more questions, was that both of them were in the back seat, which is odd to me, too, because Roxy Maynard, you can see in the chair, she thinks she's queen bee, and she's always a front seat dog. Now, she's in that front seat. For her to be in the back is just weird.
Do you know if... Did they do any sort of checking of the river at all for, like, any searching, or...
Well, they showed, as far as on video, like, I think it was the Friday or Saturday after that, they put one of them submarine things we didn't know about until after we seen it on the news, too. I guess one of those submersible, I don't know, sonar things. That's where they put a flag, and that's where everybody, like, in the area started searching that area, because they put a flag there. Because we all, myself included, assumed that that's where his truck was parked. Well, it wasn't. They put that thing in north of where the truck was actually parked. But I know they did it that one day. I know they've said they had DNR out there and stuff, but that's not what the locals tell me. They tell me they have. But then we had the river flooding out. It was too low at first because there was a drought. And then we just recently, they had flooding. So then they couldn't get anything in there. The locals said they haven't really seen anybody out there searching.
Do you guys believe that Jared's the one? Drove that spot, or do you think that someone else could have driven the truck? Because Crystal says if somebody stole the truck, maybe they just opened all the doors, hoping the dogs would get out, and then they wouldn't, or whatever.
Well, and that's what I was about to ask, is if the dog, would the dogs be okay if someone else got in that truck and started driving it? Like, how friendly are they to strangers, I guess?
Samantha, go ahead.
Yeah, they're road dogs. Jared took them everywhere with him, and he often went places specifically to take them. You know, he would take them out for a ride just because they'd been at the house all day. So they would have got in the car and rode with anyone. You know,
I hear the dog right on cue there. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's fine. Roxy May is so loud. She's got that squeaky loud, and she's outside, and you can still hear her.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he know anyone in Francisville that you guys are aware of?
No.
Okay.
Not that we know of. I've tried to look and tried to find any kind of connection. He really didn't. He didn't even talk to anybody in Salem since he was young. I mean, he really didn't keep in contact with anybody.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder if, like, two scenarios. One is something happened, like, outside of or near Francisville, right? And someone dropped off the truck. Or for whatever reason, if maybe he really had to stop where he was, maybe there was a hit and run. Was there any evidence of anything near that site that showed that, skid marks or anything?
No, nobody travels down that road. It's one lane gravel road. You don't have people out there. Locals don't know about that road. I mean, his truck could have been there. I mean, if you think by the time the truck died, so it'd been there prior and the phone last synced, you're talking 6 p.m. on Sunday. The truck wasn't found until 8 a.m. the next morning. And from what I understand, it's lucky that it was found then, because those roads just aren't traveled.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of sounds more like the vehicle is intentionally abandoned to me.
Right.
From what we've been told, that happens a lot in that area, as far as because the states don't communicate well between each other. You know, and because you're right across, you got Illinois and Indiana, you're right across state lines. So, from what I've heard, there's a lot of like theft, vehicle theft, and things like that go on there. So, thinking that they're not going to make a connection.
Does anyone know if this is a thing? Donald says OnStar could have record of the conversations in his cab. Do they record conversations?
I've heard that they do, but they don't, again, backdate it. I've also heard that if the phone's plugged in, if they downloaded the actual, what they call, type of black box off the truck, that they should be able to get the information of whoever plugged their phone in to even get phone records.
I would assume that would be like a pretty massive invasion of privacy, though, if OnStar was recording those. They'd probably have lawsuits if they were trying to do that, so...
And they wouldn't tell you.
As useful as it would be in this scenario, I don't know if they would or should do that.
I think that's more for, like, if you have an accident, sometimes those systems like that will start recording after an accident is detected.
Yeah, they'll have a small window they'll record before and after, like, before something happens, they'll keep track of that.
I know some of those systems, like, help you call 911 and call for help and stuff, but I don't think they're just listening and you can just go in and pull that anytime.
Is there any, are you guys like looking at the ex? Do you think that she's telling the truth? Is she sincere about everything going on? Do you think she has anything to do with his disappearance?
Well, I would love to speak on that.
All right, sounds good.
In my opinion, I think she knows more information than she's willing to give.
Which that's actually a fact, though, phone records.
That's true, because we've got the phone records and we've managed to, you know, you talk to people that know people and talk to other people. And I've even gotten screenshots of the conversation, what it looked like on her phone that she sent to other people that eventually got back around to me. And there are, compared to Jared's phone record, there are text messages deleted out of that conversation. So she deleted messages out of their conversation and then sent that conversation to other people trying to make it look a certain way. We have proof of that.
Including the detective.
So what was the conversation without going into detail? Was it like an argument going on? Or
instructions of how to get here, sending her address. You know, Jared mentioned something about he had trouble with the fence that he brought for the dogs because he had the dogs with him. So he must have brought some type of fencing or outdoor kennel to keep them in or something, because he mentions that he lost his fence, like it fell off the truck or something like that. And sorry, I was getting a call. And then
that's okay.
But I feel like she knows more information, because her story to me was that at one point Jared was on the phone with her, and I'd like to add that day she was the only person that he spoke to on his phone record, the only one. So I feel like she has to at least know why he left her area, why he decided to go toward Indiana for whatever reason. I won't say that she is directly responsible or directly involved in Jared's disappearance, but I absolutely believe that she has more information that could at least be a little bit helpful that she's afraid to tell. I don't know if it incriminates her in some way, or she's just scared, but I think there's more to tell, for sure.
Did she have, like, another boyfriend now, you know, a new boyfriend or whatever that's involved at the time in the picture?
You know, gossip and rumor around town is that she's runs with a few different men that, you know, she's...
But I did talk to the one that was supposed to have been there that night, as far as whenever... Jared was supposed to arrive there, and he too was talking about, and he kind of slipped up, and you know, I'm listening to everybody and taking in all the evidence, and I know that he was driving another vehicle then, and he claimed that he was supposed to leave before Jared got there, or before Jared did get there. I mean, he kind of corrects himself, so I don't know. He does admit, and he talks about how much he loves, you know, the ex and things like that, and he did say that they were together at the time, and she was sitting right next to him whenever he was saying all this to me, so, because it was on video. But
yeah, and Jared weren't going to be there till 2 or 3 in the morning, so it's weird that he's going to get up at 2 or 3 in the morning to leave so that characters by the night. Like, why wouldn't he just stay? If they're right. all, if everything's amicable there.
Right.
Yeah, the stories that were given from that side of things just don't really make a whole lot of sense, you know.
And they said that those two went together to see the sun on that day. So, I mean, that's just coming out of their mouth. So, again, I don't know whether they did or they didn't.
Yeah.
So we did want to give a shout out to your page here. It's taking me a second to get it up. So this is you guys' page, Finding Jared McCall. And so tell me about the creation of this. And you might have mentioned something earlier about maybe some people not being so happy about you creating it.
Right. So when this very first started, Knox County, which is where Jared's truck was found and the department that is handling this whole case, they posted on their Facebook page that same picture that is on our Facebook page of Jared and Roxy, and they just listed his name, his age, his description, and labeled it as an attempt to locate. They didn't give any further information that, like, his vehicle was found abandoned. They didn't elaborate on anything. And I, of course, was watching that post from the start to see what local people were saying. And instantly, local people were worried because since Knox County didn't clarify, they were concerned because they wanted to know, you know, is this person dangerous? Is that why we're attempting to locate him? Did he do something bad? Is he hurt? Could he be hurt? And Knox County just kind of seemed to paint this narrative of like, oh, we're just trying to find this guy. And it was like they just kind of wanted to keep it kind of quiet. And quiet was the last thing on my mind. So
absolutely.
But I think what worried Samantha too, though, was that people commenting on there were asking, well, is he wanted? Should we have our guns out? Should we be protecting ourselves? Right. Is he dangerous? I think that's what Sam jumped into action, though.
Local people are literally saying, like, I got my gun with me just in case, you know, do I need to be worried? And I'm like, oh my God, absolutely not. Like, I made a Facebook page and I made it public. So anybody that could join. And I actually took the time to take people off of that initial Knox County post and invite them to the page that I made so that they could get proper information, because Knox County just wasn't putting any information out there except for the fact that what he looked like and they wanted to find him. And it took off fast. There, we had, I think, over 2,000 within the first 2 days. And then we quickly jumped to like 5,000 and 6,000 people. And the detective in Knox County was not very happy with me because I was not very happy with them and I was being vocal about it.
And you have every right to do that if you don't think that they're handling things properly. Mm-hmm. And if they're upset about it, then maybe that means that they should be doing something different, right?
Well, I think what started that was a phone call that, because, of course, you know, I was calling Samantha and telling her everything because the detective wouldn't talk to anybody but me. But I told Samantha, I was kind of crying. I was like, well, he told me there's nothing they can do because they don't have any resources to go and search for him if he's in the river. And I was like, I can't stand for him to be in the river. I mean, they said they don't have no resources. And Sam went into action on that. And she didn't put him down. She was just asking for help as far as resources. You know, can we find anybody that can get in the river? Can we get a boat? Because that's what Knox County said. And they really did say that. I mean,
right.
Which is, it's not their fault what the department has or doesn't have. But I mean, we just wanted to find him.
Kathy Bauer says that, I'm guessing she's talking about the ex-girlfriend, said that he told her he was lost. Is that what she told you guys, too, that he called and said, I'm lost? Or texted her?
Yeah, that was her story to me, was that Jared was on the phone with her, and he was being real quiet, and he was saying that he was lost, and she was telling him to just put her address in the GPS, and he just wouldn't do it. He didn't want to do that.
But when I talked to her that last time, she said it was the last phone call. like closer to the 11 o'clock is what she told me. But, you know, things kind of keep changing about each time, so.
And I would also like to add to that from that point on, from 1:30 in the morning on until 11, he was still talking to her on the phone. There's incoming calls from her that last a few minutes. There's multiple. So they were having conversations for hours that whole time.
So when was the truck found? It was like 8 a.m. the following day. So that would be the 6th?
Yeah, November 6th, that Monday morning.
And the last contact was around 11 a.m. on the 5th.
On Sunday. Yeah,
and that's when
and
all
he should have been at her house around 2:30, 3 o'clock a.m.
Right. But they were still speaking to each other on the phone from 2:30 on till 11. She was his last phone call. She was the last person to talk to him.
But then the phone also didn't die until after 6:30 some point that we know of, because that's the last time his phone synced and around the time the battery on the truck died. But there were no more phone calls after that 11:08.
Yep.
So that's a weird time of day, too.
So phone was still active for about 7 hours.
Mm-hmm. What day was that? Was that a Monday?
Yeah, Monday morning, the 6th. Yeah.
Yep.
Monday morning, 11 a.m., his phone disconnects.
No, 11 a.m. when she called was on that Sunday morning.
Oh, Sunday morning.
Yes, 11 a.m. on Sunday morning was his last phone call that actually lasted for a substantial amount of time. It was about 11 minutes, I think. And that was between him and her. And then his phone was still on until about 5-6 o'clock Sunday evening. Like, the battery was still charged because he was still receiving text messages from other people up until then.
And what was found inside his vehicle? His phone, his wallet?
No.
None of that was in the truck.
No, everything was in the truck except for those things.
Yes. So his phone, his wallet, his coat that he was supposed to be wearing, those were all missing, not in the truck. But his luggage that he had packed was still in the truck. His, you know, his grooming bag, his bag of clothes, all that was still in the truck.
Okay.
And his spare shoes. He had his work boots with him and his sliders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, as a guy, I carry my wallet everywhere, so
I would think. Right. Yeah, but I'm thinking about that though too. What gets me too, like, even as far as finding the truck. Now, Jared, anybody who knows Jared doesn't drive the truck. I can't tell you how many times he's forgot his darn wallet or his phone because he doesn't carry stuff in his back pocket. He'll throw it in the, you know, the console or whatever, or throw it in the dresser. So I kind of find it odd that both his phone and his wallet are missing. Also, because it should have been on the console, and he's not going to, even if, let's say, he got out to go pee or walk the dogs, he's not going to take that and put everything in our pockets. Jared's lost more phones than I can even count. I mean, this phone he just had since August, because he can't stand the phone. He leaves it laying everywhere, and he just doesn't want anything to do with it. So
it was only a 3-month-old phone because he loses them so often to start with, right?
Right, and that's why he's got the cheap, like, Motorola phone, because he loses them so much and he doesn't care for it. But I mean, he wouldn't just pick up his phone and put it in his pocket and go walk the dogs. He'd leave it in the, you know, console.
And we have to believe, so if the calls are on 11, phone power's down at 5.
I'd say
if he'd gone into the river,
it showed it last synced around 6:30, but it also shows the truck battery died around 6:30. So because we got that GMC app. So the phone could have been on after the battery died or whatever. I mean, that's the last time it synced in the truck.
So say he accidentally fell in the river or something like that. That phone would have shut off then, right?
You would assume right. So.
It wouldn't. So have, would it you be? Would assume that it wouldn't have lasted very long in water.
And then we did get a hit on our email, because the phone again was also in our name. He's on our plan, you know, that extra $20 or whatever. But it was, I think, on the, let's see, the SIM card request to activate on 11/22. We got an email alert that said somebody had requested to activate a new SIM card on that line. I called the detective immediately, sent him the email. I called Verizon. Both of them said they didn't know what that meant or anything else, and we've never found out anything since. I've still got his phone active and on, because I mean,
don't
I don't
know what that means.
Yeah, that's what they told me. I mean, I don't know what it means because I'm kind of technically dumb, but
well, it sounds like someone was swapping out SIM cards and taking over the phone.
Well, that's kind of what I think too, but I'm kind of hesitated. I don't want to report it stolen because I'm, you know, what if? I mean, that's
right, as mom, right, still, right, right.
Kathy Bauer says, what's in his shoes by the truck and his boots were in his truck, which means he was barefoot.
Go ahead.
So we were told, well, I won't say we were told. We heard from other people talking locally that his shoes were found in the wood line between his truck and the river. Because where it was, there's like the road and the truck's on the side of the road, and then there's like just a real thin, small, like thicket of a wood line right there, and then it drops off down to the river. And some local people were talking that his shoes were found in that shallow wood line. So Tammy just straight up asked the detective if they were, and he said yes, that they were found in the wood line there, about 10 feet apart, his Skechers shoes.
Okay, but that was a comment that was just on there too, saying his shoes were found 10 feet apart. That is right. So bizarre.
No one told us about that. No one from the police agency told any of us that.
We had to hear it through gossip and rumors. And that was that was hard because we were on our way back from getting the truck and the dogs. And I mean, I was kind of a mess because that puts a whole different spin on it, on things, you know, for me. I mean, for him to be... the shoes found that way, then I'm thinking, you know, he's in the river and kind of like having a hard time with that.
Yeah, and that's a pretty massive river too, from the looks of it.
Did they do a dog search of the area? Like, did the dogs track him at all?
Well, depending on who you'd ask, I was told that they did, but I wasn't told until long after. But from other locals and dog experts that I do know, from what I understand, they only have what they call green dogs. So I guess they're like kind of in training. And so I was told that the dogs hit on his shoes and then hit on the river. But according to other dog people, including like who's talking about, you know, Ronnie with Brothers of the Water, him and also Band Together Canine, they know dogs. And they were explaining to me that you have to have a different dog for each thing, you know, like a water dog, a cadaver dog, you know, different dogs.
Yeah, trained for specific things. Yeah.
Right.
And from what I understand, their dogs were labeled as green dogs, and they can't do those things because they're what you consider new, I guess, green.
Jeff, I have a question. Is there any way that I could pop out for just a minute and jump back in? I actually just had someone message me and tell me to call them with some important information, and I'm going to see how important that is.
Yeah, you do your thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We'll hold down
the fort. We'll get back on in a few minutes.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, thank you.
So, Donald, thank you for checking that. So, he says, Google says a Motorola phone will die after 0 minutes if underwater. So, like, almost instantaneously.
Yeah, oh, I guarantee it. Especially since he didn't have a case on it. Yeah.
Right. Really bizarre.
Everything is so, like, the pattern of travel is really odd. I mean, they did see him on video camera, right? So that's obvious that he did that, but still it seems weird that he was traveling around so many different places when he had a place, when he had somewhere to go, right?
Right.
And then for his vehicle just to be abandoned on a nondescript dirt road or one-way sort of road with his dog still in the vehicle.
Why be so secretive about everything? I mean, why do I got to hear through rumors about his shoes or anything else? Why not include me into anything, you know, as far as, like I said before, that if I seen him on video and knew the way he was walking or acting, I would know. You know,
right.
How the dogs were even positioned in the truck, I could know.
Well, and that's the thing, is because this isn't being investigated as a homicide, right? It's just a missing person, so there's no reason to not give you guys information.
Okay, I'm going to be contrary for a minute, as my husband tries to claim it. missing person because I insisted it to be a missing person and we pushed for it. Now, it's been out there because I'm already banned from their site, Knox County Sheriff's Office, but I'm not a big fan of the sheriff's and he's not a big fan of me. But he never spoke to me during on any of this. And I finally have only talked to him one time, and that was for a few minutes, and that's after and Detective Carr was actually sitting right there. You know, and he went on the news and made it more like Jared was on the run and a dangerous felon. He never even spoke to me at that time. And every information, every bit that he gave was false and incorrect. And the reason why I'm banned off their site, and I was nice about it, and I did screenshot it, and I was very nice about it, and I asked him to please go publicly and on the news like he did originally and apologize. I mean, I've got proof that he lied in there. So, I mean, just apologize. I mean, Jared's most likely in heaven, but still, I mean, I'm a big researcher as far as family history goes. I don't want his grandkids to look up, you know, how many years later and see, well, my grandpa did, because this is still hanging around the internet.
Yeah. Kathy asks, have any flyers been put up around the racetrack in Indy?
I have no idea.
And then Crystal says, I guess what it comes to is, would there be any reason to fake his own disappearance? If not, were the dogs scared so they stayed in the truck?
I can't think of any reason to fake his own disappearance. Andrew's mom dependent. I mean, he would never go without talking to me.
I meant to ask that earlier. Like, it seems like he's very family orientated. He loves being, like, it doesn't seem like this is probably nothing that he's ever done before. It's like, even disappear for like a couple weeks, right? Like, I'm assuming you guys have always known where he is, what he's doing.
And especially after his brother passed away. I mean, we don't ever go a day without talking, at least on text message. There's always a good morning, mom, I love you. Good night, mom, I love you. And it's always the I love you more. I mean, it does not happen.
Right.
And then Tony says, a question for Tammy. Was Jared an authorized user? And did he know the PIN number to the Verizon account? That goes back to the SIM card.
No, he was not an authorized user. As far as the PIN number, he probably wouldn't remember it. I think we've given it to him before when he's had phones swapped, you know, at the Verizon store, changing like 900 times, like you said before. But he's not an authorized user. Anytime they had to do that, they always had to call me and I had to talk through the phone or whatever.
And I hate to even have to ask you this, but Tammy, was there any blood evidence found at the scene, like any sign of dress from Jared?
If there was, they didn't tell me.
You would assume again that that's something that they could tell you, because again, like, but it's not being investigated as like a homicide or just a missing person, right?
I've never even known the exact location of the truck. So I mean, what would they tell me if they can't tell me exactly where the truck was in the beginning?
That blows my mind. And you said that you're like banned from their site. Like, you're not allowed to send them emails or?
Well, no. I guess if you go on Knox County Sheriff's Department on Facebook, it's their Facebook.
So yeah.
I made a comment on there, and I'm just asking them to please apologize, and I'm blocked or whatever.
Yeah. See, I think that to me sounds like a big violation, because politicians have been sued for blocking people. If it's the official Knox County Sheriff's Department,
it is. I discussed that with the detective, and people messaged me, and I did file a report with that link that one of our followers had given me, and I did file a report, but because I did have a screenshot of it, and I was nice. I wasn't rude. I said, please. I mean, I wasn't being mean.
Yeah, and either way, it's a sheriff's department. The sheriff's department is one of the few, how do I say this? They're one of the few people that are supposed to uphold the Constitution, right? And like, the free speech is one of the most important things. So them barring you from speaking to them, even on a platform like Facebook, is absolutely ridiculous. Like, I am appalled that is even going on.
Yeah.
Terry Staples says, has the family considered a private investigator?
We have, but everything that I've been told, you know, from what I'm doing, I'm the one talking to people, and I'm the one who's doing the research, and the private investigator, from what I've told, can't get anything more than what I've already gotten. I mean,
And here's the other thing is, families try to hire a private investigator, so they create a GoFundMe page to try to help pay for the private investigator. And then all of a sudden people think, oh, well, the family's just out for money. And
right. And that's why I have not, and I will not do any kind of GoFundMe or anything like that. And I did, unfortunately, I've got a cousin who went through the same scenario, and her daughter had went missing. And they found her a good while long later, and she unfortunately was deceased. But she's kind of given me, she said a private investigator didn't find anything more than what she did, just cost her a whole lot of money, you know.
Well, maybe if they won't talk to you, maybe Samantha can file a Freedom of Information Act because it's a full request, because it's a non-murder investigation or homicide investigation. Maybe they will release some more information.
Well, I do think that Marissa with the Vantage podcast, I do think that she filed one, and she got a thing back from their lawyer, and was supposed to disclose some. You'll have to ask her the specifics on that, because I don't know if she's heard back. But they were supposed to give her what information they could by the 6th. And to my knowledge, they said that nothing was going to be released because it was active investigation. But again, those are she's the one who talked to them and filed that paperwork. So she's the one who could better tell you what she got in return.
You know, what's funny is they always tell families, like, oh, he's an adult, he's allowed to disappear if that's what he wants to do. But yet, clearly, they think something else is going on because they're not going to release any evidence or any files.
Well, my deal is they say it's an active investigation. So, what are they actively doing?
And why would you want to hide details of this? You're trying to find someone who has been missing. Not that they've committed a crime. But oh my word! So yeah, we're definitely going to give them a call tomorrow and see what they have to say about this.
I just want to know, honestly, what they are actively doing. If they're not actively doing anything, that's fine. Because I'm talking to people, and I've got like several different, I don't want to say leads, but people are talking to me and giving me more information. But here's another good question for you, okay?
Yeah.
While I'm kind of in my, like, a fit. So last, over the weekend, which, mind you, remember, the detectives and the sheriff, they only work 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, so you can't get a hold of them in between. But over the weekend, there was a body found in the Bloomington area, Monroe County, which is north of there. It's about an hour and a half. But as a mom, they're saying skeletal remains, and, you know, the worst things go into your head. So then in my mind, I'm thinking, well, how does that work? Because now we're most likely looking at recovery. So what about dental records? What about x-rays? Why haven't they asked me for any of that? Because as weird as I am, but kind of because of football, Jared's broken a couple of bones and had to go to orthopedics. So I have the x-rays with him, you know, back when in his football days. And I still have the x-rays in my safe back at home. Why have they never asked me about broken bones or dental records or anything like that to help identify that situation? I mean, and I did ask him, and he said that they don't, and they'll get them when needed as far as from the dentist. But how does he know what dentist he even went to?
And those remains were from a female, right? Isn't that what they came up with just recently?
I think that was a different one, because I just seen that today. But this one was, I don't know that they've given much information. This one was at that Monroe County Airport, I guess, outside of
Bloomington. How far away is that from his truck?
The locals there have to tell you. I'm not familiar with the area. I think maybe hour and a half, maybe. They could better tell you, because honestly, a lot of them have been a godsend to me, because I don't know the area. They've kind of helped me maneuver through all of it.
So this is for Robson Jewers. I believe this is his sister. She said, absolutely, I know the feeling. We spoke with them in person initially, then it's thrown out. Like, the police just don't care. I don't understand it.
Well, if they're not going to investigate it, fine, because nobody's going to be held accountable. Give me all the information. Give me everything that you have and let me investigate it. So then maybe I can get some boats on the water. Maybe I can find him, because that's all I want. I want to find him. Then I'll hold somebody else responsible, whoever is responsible, if somebody is. But somebody's lying and something led him there, but I want to find him first.
So if I can just ask a question real quick. So I'm trying to look up the Knox County Sheriff's Department on Facebook. All I'm finding is Knox County Police Department.
Yeah, there's an actual, unless they took it off, because I kind of complained to the sheriff about it yesterday. I don't know, Kathy or Janera, one of them, I know they could probably tell you. I mean, there's an actual Facebook site. It's Knox County Sheriff's Department.
So I do have some comments in the section here. Were they looking for him? Was police looking for him for a warrant or anything like that that you're aware of?
No, not at that time. No. He did get in a little bit of trouble or whatever in Louisiana, but that was supposed to be dismissed. So they issued a warrant on November the 17th for failure to appear for an arraignment. He was on bond, but he was doing good. It wasn't no big deal. It was going to be dismissed, but he was out on bond.
And then Janera Boomershine says active investigation, but no updates to public. The news and the sheriff said, Jared is wanted, call if located, do not approach. So how is it different than the attempt to locate on November 6th? They aren't giving more info out. Yeah, they're like really shit about everything.
Right, because what he did in the middle of December was he tried to say, because Jared was on probation, and that's what everybody keeps bringing up. We'll say parole. Jared Thank messed you. Up years ago, and he spent 5 years in prison, and he was on supervised release from there, and he got out in November of 2018. And he was due to get off of probation, supervised probation, parole, whichever you want to call it, I don't know the difference. But he had to meet with him every month. He was doing good. He was set to get off November the 17th. I thought it was the 18th, but his probation officer actually called me on the 26th of February to let me know that she was going to have to file a revoke on him. For absconding because he didn't show up for his last probation meeting because obviously he's missing.
But he and was Tony.
You do 5 years, it's an 5 year supervised parole where you have to meet with this man every month, get drug tested, follow the line, you know, do everything right and proper. And you're getting done with it and getting written off of it and being free from it on November the 17th, and you're going to come up missing. And that what the sheriff said and what they said. Is why I asked for the apology, because the sheriff put that out there that he was on the run from the law and dangerous because that he was wanted as far as the parole violation. The parole officer called me to give me a heads up on February 26th that she was going to have to violate it. So what the sheriff said back in December was a complete lie to the public and to the media. That's why I publicly and politely said please and wanted an apology. Because that is a falsehood. You can look it up in the, you know, internet world.
Yeah.
As far as whenever it was revoked.
And Tony makes a good point. You can't appear in court when you're missing.
Right.
So court was in Louisiana after he went missing. So a warrant was issued for his arrest. Yes, he was supposed to show up in court, but he's been missing for several weeks at this point.
Right. Which they told me that's all standard procedure. They don't have a choice, you
know. Oh, standard procedure. Yeah. They're a little bit of common sense. Goes a really long ways.
And they actually mailed the warrant. I've got it here. I mean, I got the warrant. They mailed it. It's just failure to appear, and it was a arraignment hearing. You know, I mean, he didn't even have a lawyer yet. It's not like he was going to go to jail. It's just go in there and plead guilty or not guilty.
Welcome back, Samantha.
Jeff, I think.
Sorry.
I think Kathy wants you to call the station. If you want to hold them up, we'll call them live on the air here.
I'm willing to do it. No, I have their Facebook up. I have their phone number up here. I'm going to call them. They're probably not open right now, but...
No, they close at 5.
Right. No, they're getting a phone call for sure. And maybe they'll block me from the Facebook page, too.
Hi.
All right, Samantha, what's the update?
Any update for us, or...
Is it the cat's ass?
It's for you guys. It's not for you guys. It's something that I have to share privately with Tammy before we can talk about it with anyone else. Yeah. But
I figured.
Okay.
Yeah, hurry up if you're trying.
It did seem kind of important and pertinent, so I will say that. So me and you definitely need to talk ASAP outside of this
then
live.
You want
to
wrap up.
Yeah. We're at about that time anyways. I think we've covered a lot of stuff. And like I said, definitely I'm going to be making a phone call. And if I can get anything out of it, we record all that stuff. I have to find out about the single party consent laws for recording in Indiana, but I'm assuming it's okay.
I know in our state it's just one party.
Yeah, we can record any conversation without the other person knowing. But I mean, I would let them know that it's recording anyways. I don't think it'd be a secret considering it's technically, as weird as it sounds, it's a media call. So we technically work for the media, Travis, if we make a phone call like this.
Well, but we're volunteers for the media because we're not getting paid.
As far as that disclosure letter, I haven't talked to her since last week, but she still keeps in contact, but I don't know if she's heard back on that disclosure.
So, Heather, I apologize. I'm not going to try to slaughter your last name, but Heather has a question. She said, did he have to get permission to leave the state to go down and see his son?
Yeah, he should have, so I don't know what caused him to leave so quick and in such a hurry and why you did it at the tail end. But again, I can't explain because he was just here at the end of October seeing us. So, and he had to travel from to come here, so something must have happened. You know, to get him. And I know that if he was told that his son was getting hurt or abused, which that, from what I understand, the detention center is closed now due to things of that nature, then he would go running to try to help his son.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
Justice for Rob Morrison Jewers page, they said, I wish you all luck in locating him. We'll keep you all my thoughts and prayers. Thank you for sharing.
And I'm sharing also the link again to everyone. Go, you know, follow their page as well. And if you guys have any more stuff that you want to send to us to post out there, absolutely. Any updates, let us know. We'll definitely keep sharing anything that we get from you guys. But
and real quick to end this also to Band Together K9 is doing another search this Saturday. So they're looking for any help and any volunteers. It's all listed on our Facebook page, so anybody who's able to come out and help, they can.
Awesome.
And I wanted to add too, like, if you're new to the Facebook page, when you get there, if you look at the pinned post up at the top of the page and kind of take the time to go through those before reading the newest stuff on the page, it'll really help nail down a good timeline so you can read it and really get an idea of it. And there's a lot of common questions that we get that are answered in a lot of those pinned posts. So take the time to go through the pinned posts first and then go through and look at the most recent things that we've been doing and got going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I see that on a lot of pages where people ask the same questions that have been answered 100 times. Mm-hmm. So that's good. That's smart of you guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, you guys have been at this now for November 5th. What are we now? March?
Day 129.
So you're still new at this yourselves, and you're doing an excellent job getting his name out there and his story out there. And we commend you, and we hope for the best, and hopefully Jared will be found very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight and listening in, and definitely share this out to get this story spread as far as you can, because, like, up here in the Northeast, like, it's not something we're even aware of, but like we were saying earlier, you guys have done a really good job of spreading this yourselves, but you know, can't do it without the help of people watching as well and paying attention to this stuff. So
Rachel says, my wife and I are planning on joining the search this Saturday. And
awesome.
Thanks for sharing. Don't forget Jared.
Thank you.
Don't forget Jared. Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. And thank you guys very much for joining us tonight. It's been awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you
so much
for having us and helping us get the story out there even more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Anything we can do, guys. All right. Well, good night to everybody. All right. Bye.
For 5-year-old Taylor Williams led investigators to Alabama this week.
So we have some breaking news from Florida. An arrest has been made
tonight, after years of agony, a glimmer of hope for the family.
Investigators spent hours searching through this house off Pennsylvania Avenue.
What could be a major development in the search for missing Alabama teenager?
Tonight, a stunning twist in the search for Taylor.
Somebody out there knows something.
They want to lay him to rest their way, not by somebody else's way.